I'm Britta Wigginton.
I'm Brett Scholes.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
We're a group of early career researchers.
And we're all from the International Society of Critical Health Psychology,
otherwise known as ISCHIP.
And you're listening to The Operative Word.
Hello. You're listening to Volume 1, Issue 1 of The Operative Word, the official podcast of the International Society of Critical Health Psychology, which we sometimes refer to as ISCHIP for short. I'm Brett Scholes, a research fellow from the Synergy Nursing and Midwifery Research Centre at the University of Canberra and ACT Health.
I'm really excited because, I mean, this idea for the podcast came about while we were at ISCHIP, and it was the first opportunity that all three of us got to present a 5-minute challenge at the conference.
That's Dr. Alexandra Gibson, or Ali, a research fellow in public health and manager of the Qualitative Research Network Hub at the University of New South Wales, which we sometimes refer to as UNSW throughout the podcast. Together with Dr. Britta Wigginton, who we'll hear from very shortly, Ali and I are co-editing this volume of The Operative Word. As Ali mentioned, the idea for this podcast arose from the 10th Biennial Conference of ISCHIP held in July 2017 in Loughborough in the UK. 8 society members, including us 3 podcast co-editors, were selected to provide a 5-minute challenge to critical health psychologists about how we engage in our work. This volume will be talking to each 5-minute challenger. The first of these is Dr. Britta Wigginton. Britta is a lecturer and researcher in the disciplines of public health and psychology at the University of Queensland, also known as UQ. Let's first hear from Britta recounting the challenge she gave us at the conference.
What steps do we take as critical health psychologists to address global health issues? Perhaps we can begin to answer this question by considering the strengths of our discipline. In particular, critical health psychology has usefully taken a range of perspectives, theories, and methodologies to explore the role of various axes of privilege on health. In short, we are well equipped at exploring how various social locations or intersections of social identities shape experiences of health. These might include gender, sexualities, abilities, class, and ethnicities, to name a few. What I would like to draw attention to is the potential to overlook the role of the broader environment in shaping human health, and how people shape environments, particularly when we foreground these social positions as our lens of analysis. The physical and material surroundings of where we live are intimately tied to how we live, and by implication our health experiences, health trajectories, and access to healthcare and treatment. These environments are shaped by global economies and structures, but without making the material environment visible, we cannot thoroughly understand how health inequalities manifest and play out. I argue today that the link between place, that is the material world, and health, insofar as discursively and materially experienced and represented, needs to be front and centre of our work in critical health psychology, particularly if we wish to be equipped to deal with current and future global health issues. The fields of health promotion and public health have called loudly for a focus on the environment. For example, under the Ottawa Charter, a dominant framework within health promotion, this call comes under the action area entitled Creating Supportive Environments. This similarly manifests in a settings approach to public health. And ultimately, this call hinges on the notion that a healthy environment is a fundamental determinant of population health. My challenge today is to orient critical health psychologists to questioning the extent to which their work is connected with this concept of environments. People are always located in place and narrate and identify themselves in environments. And it's through a focus on place that we can connect to the broader environment, whether it's natural, built, or physical. I present this challenge in light of significant environmental and ecosystem threats that have and will continue to have an enormous impact on human health. Indeed, public health scholars Lang and Rayner have argued that we need to think and act ecologically if we are to reshape the conditions that enable good health to flourish. So I would like to invite critical health psychologists to connect with place in order to build meaningful connections with environmental, or what are otherwise termed ecological, determinants of health, and therefore begin to consider the role of the environment in human health, and vice versa. For instance, one way we might connect the material and the discursive is asking how the physicality of a space or place enables particular discursive realities. Ultimately, my reorientation to place is motivated by a call for attention to the environment. In presenting this challenge, I appreciate that our research areas are disparate and that the environment can feel distal and disconnected or even irrelevant from the research that we do in the clinic, hospital, or school. However, by foregrounding place in our research and by implication the material world of our participants, we connect people and their environments. My challenge may offer a way forward in addressing earlier calls from critical health psychologists to foreground the material world in addressing the interests in the interests of addressing global issues of inequalities and social justice. In closing, I leave you with a question. How can we as critical health psychologists broaden our research to consider the role of place in health in order to meaningfully address global environmental issues? I ask this question for two reasons. One, because these environmental issues have a direct implication for human health, particularly those who are socially and economically marginalized. And two, because as critical health psychologists, we are well equipped methodologically and theoretically to explore those who are disproportionately affected by these global environmental and health issues. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Britta. We want to hear some more about your challenge. Ali?
You know, when Kerry contacted us,
Professor Kerry Chamberlain is a critical social and health psychologist at Massey University and is a key member of the International Society of Critical Health Psychology.
To say, you know, would you like to participate in the 5-minute challenge? What were your first thoughts?
I can't say no to this. I need to do this because Kerry's asked. But then I was thinking, and the challenge, I guess, that I found in writing it was it couldn't be about your own research. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it more of a like stirring the pot at ISPA. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, conceptually, methodologically, stirring the pot. Mm-hmm. And so I think that thinking a bit more generally was challenging for me because we are often, especially with conference hats on, we're thinking so specifically about concrete projects and what we're presenting. So I really struggle to think outside of my work and locate kind of a problem or an issue or something that I wanted to unpack quickly.
It's funny that you say stirring the pot. And I think that kind of really taps into one of, I guess, the core aims of ISCHIP is to kind of, you know, push the envelope a bit, stir the pot, and really, you know, challenge the status quo. So I wonder, thinking about your talk, what really struck me was the challenge to researchers that thinking about the environment isn't the status quo in research. Can you talk a bit more about that? Like, why, you know, what made you think to challenge researchers on that issue?
Yeah, interesting question, Ali. And I think something that I was a little bit, well, I felt a bit worried about presenting my 5-minute challenge because I thought, oh, how's this going to float? I have no idea what people are going to think about this. Am I just being like a little bit out there in terms of presenting something that's really general? But in a public health sphere, which is kind of the space that I occupy the most in my work, it's not at all kind of odd to really focus on place or environments. And a lot of the reorientation to the natural environment that I was trying to do in that talk, I felt like potentially wasn't going to fit. And I say that, but I think that that's the point, as you say, Ali, to challenge what's fitting in critical psychology. And before, you know, one of the things that I did in writing the talk was I looked through the program to see what people were presenting. And I thought, oh, is anyone talking about the environment? Is anyone talking about kind of environmental issues which are relevant to health? So are we going there at all in this program? And when I saw that we weren't, I kind of got a bit worried. in terms of, I guess, feeling a little bit vulnerable or out there in terms of presenting something that was maybe not a place that we're occupying or a content area that we're stepping into. So there was definitely that concern, but I think actually it was being at the conference that I thought, and sitting through talks where we kept, you know, the discussion around, and the after the following the presentation, the discussion around the talk was very much orienting to the physicality, the material, the place. I thought, okay, no, this is okay. The talk's going to float. Mm-hmm. But I think there's always that sense of vulnerability with the 5-minute challenge that you kind of like, oh my goodness, or at least I did. And yeah, that link to the environment, I think, is something we have neglected in critical health psychology, and that connection with environmental issues and health and social determinants, social inequalities, is something that we need to go there, and we're not at present. It's really marginalized. Yeah.
Britta, as you know, you kind of have mentioned, in the public health space, that's not unusual to focus on that. Mm. Whereas in more traditional psychology, it probably is left of field, if you like. How do you deal with that in your own work? You say you're mostly occupying a public health space. Is there a challenge for you in trying to reconcile those positions, or does it come naturally to you? How do you
work? And when you say to reconcile those positions, do you mean the absence?
Yeah, or being in a, coming from a background that doesn't necessarily attend to these kinds of issues, and now being in a place that does. Is that a challenge at all?
Yeah, absolutely, Brett. And one of the things that I kind of came to recognize moving to public health was some of the ways in which my PhD was quite placeless. Or my PhD was really, and of course, you know, PhDs are generally like this. They're very contained. It's very specific. But the ways in which my PhD could have actually been broadened through kind of that other lens, through a shift to place, that's something definitely that I've kind of been working through myself. And yeah, I think that public health is a more comfy space for me, because there's less to defend methodologically, and in Australia a lot of our psychology departments are very mainstream, so it's challenging for us to find the space in which our way of thinking, our way in which the questions we ask, the methods we use are not questions. So public health is definitely more comfy, but usefully has challenged me to think about environments, and particularly the link to the natural environment. And
so, just for listeners who don't know your PhD research, I wonder, just like thinking of an example, would you say, if you wanted to bring in place more, and I mean, you were looking at women smoking during pregnancy, so would you have, you know, maybe place more emphasis on the contextualization of these women's lives, like geographically, or do you kind of, would you understand place in another way, like not necessarily a geographical entity?
Yeah, absolutely, Ali. I think that there was so much space to do that. And in fact, even though I did one-off kind of the drive-by interview with women, one of the things that was so strong in the interviews was the fact that where they smoked was so important to them, because they were very selective about where they were willing to smoke and in front of whom. So exploring that further could have been in a very gentle way with women, in terms of, because most women were smoking at home, so looking closely at the domestic sphere in terms of how smoking is managed. Yeah. And particularly, you know, around the hiding smoking in that sphere, and from children and protecting others. So I think that there was more to unpack there that would have opened up alternative methods, visual methods, alongside the interviews that could have been really rich. But of course, we all have that with our PhDs, don't we? We look back and go, oh, that's how I could have done that.
Hindsight is 2020.
Again, I'm as somebody who I probably haven't considered place as much as I should have, and just even chatting to you briefly now, I'm already thinking of things that I could do. Do you have any tip? You've had that extra insight of also the public health side of things and how place is more of a natural aspect of research there. Do you have any tips for those of us who are sort of new to considering place as what we can do and how we might do that?
That is a wonderful question, Brett. I like that question. Do I have any tips? Well, I think that without being prescriptive and kind of suggesting that I know best here, because I don't, this is very much a learning for me. But I think that maybe it just comes down to questioning for us in terms of part of our questioning our own research and assumptions and the kinds of questions we're asking in our work to consider how we're locating our participants, if at all, in physical place, in physical space, and by implication, place. So I think that there's always room to do this. What my 5-minute challenge was trying to do was connect to the environment as a broader concept that encapsulates the natural, built, and physical environment, and to do this via looking at place and how people are connected in place. So I think that when we look at the kinds of questions we're asking, who we're conducting our research with, there's always room to question the extent to which we're actually removing our participants from the physicality of their worlds and their reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably just a broader invitation to question rather than a set of prescriptive tips or how to go about it. Because I think that how we can ask those questions and think through our own research is very personal and specific to the context of our work. So yeah, without giving specifics, I think it's a matter of questioning, which is what we're trained to do as critical health psychs, is to constantly question.
I think that's a good reminder.
Absolutely. I also wonder, it makes me think that this is a great opportunity to have cross-disciplinary conversation as well, because I'm thinking of some recent interactions I've had with researchers in the Faculty of Built Environment here at UNSW. And what I'm realizing is incredibly rich qualitative research being done in that faculty, where their focus is on place and space and our relationship as humans to the environment, whether it's built or physical or natural. And I think some really rich ideas can come out of having conversations with people who are already doing this kind of research and look at, you know, where are the intersections, where might there be opportunities for collaboration, or just, you know, just to think about the topic a little differently. And I think that's something that, that interdisciplinary conversation is something that, again, is kind of encouraged in ISTRIP, and as critical psychologists, we certainly aren't necessarily disciplinary bound at all. So it's great if we can have those sharing of ideas.
Yes.
And even as you say, Ali, part of where this came for me in terms of what this prompted was actually my move to another discipline. For me personally, it was a move to another discipline, to learning about different frameworks and ways of understanding the world in public health and health promotion, that I came to see the kind of centrality of environments. So in a sense, absolutely, we need to cross-pollinate. We need to learn from other disciplines if we're to expand our ways of seeing the world and ways of asking questions.
And that even, what you're saying about crossing over to public health and kind of stepping out of the bounds of psychology. Just the other day on Twitter,
Professor Brett Smith is at the School of Sport, Exercise and Rehabilitation Sciences at the University of Birmingham and is internationally recognised as a methodologist in qualitative research.
Went and tweeted about how psychologists in particular need to step outside and publish in non-psychology journals. And because it's, I guess, you know, fertile ground for disseminating your ideas in different areas, for, I would imagine, through the review process, getting a lot back, you know, quite different perspectives on your work. So it can really be very generative, I think, in terms of your thinking and writing.
Just thinking out aloud here and just asking a question of you two, your most recent journal publications, have they been in psychology journals?
No.
Neither have I. I don't really publish much in psych, actually. Like the main two psych journals that I love are Qualitative Research in Psychology and Feminism Psychology.
That's true.
And they're the two that I continue to go back to.
Absolutely.
Because they're so critical. Besides that, yeah.
I wonder, coming back to your fabulous talk, have you noticed like anything, like having given your talk and now what we're like a couple of months down the line, have you noticed yourself doing anything differently, like based on the message that you were getting across?
And when you say doing things differently, what do you mean?
In terms of like taking your own advice in taking an ecological approach to looking at health, or even, because I mean, you also gave examples, or maybe it was in your other talk at SGM, where you spoke about suggestions on how researchers could be more green or think differently about the way they're conducting their research. Is that something that's been on your mind the last couple of months?
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of a new area of research that I'm slowly carving into is around that kind of environmental justice and environmental sustainability area. And yes, reflection around my own research practices, the kinds of questions that I'm asking, and the extent to which they're connecting at all with the environment. My 5-minute challenge was very much a content focused talk. I was focusing on how in the content of our research, we can connect to the environment.
Yeah.
My other talk that I gave at ISCHIP was more about process, and that our research processes connect to the environment, in that we can reflect on how the way in which we conduct research, the decisions we make around our data collection, our data analysis, our dissemination, including conference travel, all can be informed by an awareness of the environment, whether that's through reflecting on our carbon footprint as a researcher. So the 5-minute challenge was very much connecting the content of our research to the environment via place, whereas my other talk at ISCHIP was reflecting on the process of our research and connecting that with the environment and protecting the environment ultimately.
Yeah, thanks. I think that's really good that you clarified that.
And to answer another part of your question, absolutely. I kind of have tried, and I teach a health psychology elective at UQ, and it's very much, I rewrote it and I've very much written it with this ecological lens. And so my students' feedback to me is very much so, this is not what I expected from this course. And I say, great. It's good that you're not expecting this, because I am trying to broaden you outside of psychology. So the feedback from students is either, I didn't expect it to be like this, or I really like that this is going beyond psychology. So I think that in several dimensions of my being, my professional being, I'm trying to play around with this and to really apply this lens in the sense of how I teach about health, and even the research that I've started doing this last year around environmental justice is very much trying to connect with this topic area that fascinates me, and that I think there's so much for us to do as critical psychologists in terms of connecting the environment and health, which,
yeah.
You know, really needs work. So I don't know if that really answered your question.
No, that's good. And it's also reminded me of a question that just popped into my head this morning. And that was, since you gave your challenge, or when you gave your challenge at EastChip, I'm just curious, did you get any reactions from people afterwards who are doing something similar or wanted to engage more, or who challenged you on your own challenge, or did you have any reactions from others?
Yeah, that's a nice question, Brett. And I was just reflecting yesterday on how fast-paced our conference was and how I'm trying to still recollect my thoughts.
Yeah. Just the fact that the 5-minute challenge doesn't allow for questions at the end.
Mm.
So you deliver that challenge and then promptly switch to the next 5-minute challenge, and then we all went off to tea. Mm. So I wonder whether those responses were a bit delayed, like in people kind of thinking through and having time to actually think about your challenge.
Mm.
Yeah, and actually, thank you, Ali, because that just prompted me to remember what people had said. And that was, after tea time when all the 5-minute challenges had finished, and we were all standing around together, most of us had presented. And the general sense that I felt afterwards was that, wow, that was so cool. We need to do that again. And I thought that it was lovely that here you invite 8 people to think about something, and we all go away and think about it so differently and come with such rich, different ideas. So I loved that. The feedback that I received was that, I'm trying to think, the few comments that I got were that it was, how do I put it? It was almost like it was called for, as in, of course. This is absolutely what we need to be thinking about. So it was kind of
almost timely.
I wasn't presenting. Yeah, maybe it was timely. Maybe that's the word I'm thinking of. But it wasn't that I was presenting a new idea, because I'm not. It was more that maybe this is where we're getting to, and that this was because I'd seen it pop up in different presentations during the discussion point. For instance, at the end of Liz Peel's talk.
Professor Elizabeth Peel is a Professor of Communication and Social Interaction at Loughborough University. She was the chair of the ISCHIP conference in 2017.
There was a whole discussion around place with her work taking place across different settings. And then kind of she was talking about the next direction or the next step with her work, and the conversation oriented to place. And so at many points I was reminded that, no, this is where people are thinking. This is topical for us as a society. And so the comments that I received were along that kind of line, in the sense that people were agreeing that this is what we need to be thinking about.
Yeah.
Which is nice. It was validating.
Yeah.
And validating all my concerns around, oh my goodness, is this going to fit?
How did you distill quite a rich message into 5 very short minutes?
What a great question, Brett. I found it quite challenging. What I liked was the structure of writing it. If I know I have 5 slides and I have 5 images, then I essentially have 5 quick points I need to make.
Mm.
So once I could find a way to structure it around those images and around those 5 slides, it wasn't too bad. And actually, I liked that it was short. I liked that I didn't have time to waffle.
Mm.
And it made me really focus on, what am I trying to argue here? So I actually really liked the structure of it. Mm. And I didn't find it as challenging as I thought I would to write a short piece.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's not a 3-minute thesis.
No. So I guess a good segue into the next question then is, so based on, like, if your audience could take away one thing from your talk, what would it be? So essentially, what's the operative word for your challenge?
Ooh. The operative word, and I'm stuck between place or environment. I think the key message is that we cannot separate people from place, and that we need to be connecting with the material in our work, the physicality of space. The operative word then has to be place.
Thank you, Britta.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for a wonderful talk. It was fascinating on the day. It was great.
And challenging to think about. I mean, that's the aim, but it definitely has raised thoughts about how I'm going to think about this.
Oh, certainly.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Operative Word, the podcast of the International Society of Critical Health Psychology. We would love to continue this conversation with you. If you have any comments, follow our Twitter account at CritHealthPsych and or use the hashtag TheOW, short for The Operative Word. Please don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast and find any further information at the ISCHIP website. That's ischp.info. You can keep up with the editorial team on Twitter too. Ali Gibson is at Ali F. Gibson. Britta Wigington is at Brit_Wig. And I am on Twitter at Brett_Scholes.